1 Samuel chapter 17, please. We're going to read a little bit of the introduction, and I'm not going to read the whole. By the way, folks, the hardest part as a pastor is, how do you preach on this book, this chapter? It's a lot of verses. It would take us all night to read 58 verses. We'll just read the introduction, and we're going to read something I never noticed till this week. Actually, someplace down in the sticks, I was reading this, and it's like, wow, how did I miss that my whole life? Verse 1. Now the Philistines. Remember, the Philistines were people, the best way to describe them, they were Iron Age people fighting Bronze Age Jewish people. So they had all the advanced equipment, weapons, and the Jews were still fighting with bronze swords, which means two swords collide, the iron one just cuts the other one right off. Not a good idea. The Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shoko, which belongeth to Judah. And the King James shows you belongeth is not there, but the concept is, because it's in Hebrew, that's what it means. It means this is Judah's. And pitched between Shoko and, I love these words. You pronounce them the next time you read it, okay? Verse 2, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, one of the five Philistine families, remember, along the coast, the Philistine cities. The Philistines were along the coast. They had five cities. They were city-states, basically. This man's name was Goliath, and he, according to the Bible, his height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, the tallest man that we know in modern history who ever lived, Joseph, you're one of those geeky people. Who was it? He's from Alton, Illinois, by the way. Robert Wadlow. My father grew up knowing him. 8'11.1". When you see guys my height, you're like, he's like 3 feet taller almost. It's like, what? Goliath was bigger. He was over 9 feet tall. It says he had a helmet of, and this would be better translated today, bronze. It was a mixture of brass, you know, it was a mixture of things. Upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of his coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. Well, I think it's well over 100 pounds of stuff. And he had greaves of brass or bronze on his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And they say, I don't know, folks, I didn't live then, but the Philistines had developed a technique with a spear that they had it wrapped, the end. So when you threw it out, it actually made it go faster, and then you would yank it back. That's what it means by a weaver's beam. You know how the weaver's beam goes back and forth? They somehow did this, and it was a military technique. There's pictures of them. That's all I'm telling you. So that's where they learned that from. Verse 7, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him, and he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and you servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. Verse 48. The whole sermon tonight is going to revolve around these simple verses. I'm not going to preach the whole chapter. This is a great chapter. I told Frenchie, I will give you this encouragement. I read this from Dale Ralph Davis. He said, if you read this text carefully, you will realize there are really, not literally, but in reality, three Goliaths. There's the Goliath that he actually meets, the man. But he meets two before he gets there. And Dale Ralph Davis' idea is you've got to beat those two before you ever get to the real one. He met his older brother. And his older brother, so what's your problem, buddy? Why aren't you back there with those few sheep in the wilderness? What are you doing? And then he meets Saul. And Saul says, you're not able to do this. By the way, most of us never get to Goliath because we get whooped by the first two. That was the point. We continue. Verse 48. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the Philistine. He ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. I had never noticed that David wasn't picking his nose. He was running towards this monster. By the way, if you saw somebody this big, you'd be running, but it wouldn't be towards him. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone. And now this is when I was a kid. I thought we used to have slingshots, but they shot little. They had a stone. And it wasn't like this, folks. It was like this. And they practiced this stuff and slang it. And it would, if that stone hit you in the head, you're dead. But still, it's a giant. And you got your little slingshot? Good luck. Verse 49, it says, and he took thence a stone and he slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone. He smote the Philistine and slew him or killed him. But this is very important in the big picture. By the way, he didn't do it the normal way. He didn't have a sword. There was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David, he goes back to running again. Look at me, folks. If I knocked a guy down, I'd be running the other way. I wouldn't want him to get up. Of course, if you hit him hard enough with a big enough stone, he was probably dead. But it says, therefore David ran, and I like the physicality of this, and he stood upon the Philistine. And he took the Philistine's sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and he slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. We're going to look at something really simple tonight. Really, we're going to focus on just some simple ideas, and we will be done. Please look at me, and then I'm going to pray. I recommend that the you that you're thinking of, you read this chapter and think about the three Goliaths. Please hear me. I don't find most of us, and when I say most of us, the guy you're looking at, ever fight any battles. I don't find most of us ever get to the battle. David's older brother talks us out of going, or Saul talks us out of going. We never get to fight to the Goliath. We don't get that far. You'll need to read that on your own. We're just going to look at the part, why in the world was David running to this guy when most of us would be running away? By the way, I wouldn't be running away. I would look for Superman, Braden, and I'd say, Braden, take care of this person for me. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this night. May you bless our time together. May this be a profitable evening in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. When I read this story this week, I thought back to childhood and remembered that one of my earliest memories as a child was seeing my mother's Bible, and in my mother's Bible near this story was a picture of David and Goliath. And David's this little bitty kid, not a kid, but, you know, youth, and there's this big giant guy, and David's wearing, I just remember he's wearing sandals and some kind of like a tunic, you know, with his legs sticking out, and he's slinging that sling, and you kind of see you don't see anything going, but you see the Philistine, after he's hit, he's starting to tilt forward, and David's out like this or something, and that's one of my earliest memories from church, is looking through the pictures of my mother's Bible. This story's been with me that long, because it's a favorite story. Most of us have a personal philosophy. Why run when you can walk? And why walk when you can drive? And why drive when you could just take a seat? And why fight when you could send Superman as opposed to yourself? Most of us don't like this whole... Look at me. Most of us, after the first year of salvation, never get in a fight the rest of our Christian life. Our Christian life is one of comfort. Well, that's not what happened here. I've already described Goliath, monster of a guy, well over 9 feet tall. And I would recommend, all you got to do is, you know that Google thing? Google Robert Wadlow, look at the photos, and they'll show photos of sometimes three people together. When I was a boy, he died not in the 50s, I think, Might have been before that. Don't hold me to that. But in the shoe stores where I'm from, because he was from that area, they would have samples of his shoes that he had worn. They were monstrous. I got big feet. I could put both feet in those shoes. Here's Goliath. So my question tonight is this. Why in the world was David running to Goliath? Wouldn't it have been wiser to be running away from Goliath? My points are simple. Number one, and this is very imperfect and improper English. My wife will be sure to correct me tonight, and that's okay. Why did David run toward Goliath? First of all, David ran because he had a reason to be there for. That's improper English. I get it, so don't critique it. He ran towards Goliath because there was something about this that he needed to do something about. Now, the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongs to Judah. Look at me, friend. I'm going to give it in your notes. He ran towards Goliath primarily for this reason. And it's in your notes. First of all, the Philistines had invaded his home country. I believe this. In America, if a communist nation like China or Russia or one of these nations decided that these aren't communists, really, Russia isn't anymore, they're a mess. If they decided to invade America, I believe we have gotten to this place. We would not get excited as long as it wasn't our city. Well, they've moved into California, and you'd say, well, I don't know anybody in California. They've conquered Idaho. I don't care about Idaho. They've gone into Utah. Who cares about Utah? Hey, look up here. What do you do when your children have needs? Do you run to the battle or do you run away? There was a reason for David to be there for. He looked and said, they have invaded our country. Other people were hiding. I don't think David thought that was a small thing. There's a second reason. This is translated differently. We won't discuss translation tonight for time. But in 1729, David asked his brother, and maybe brothers, there were three of them there. He says, David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? Isn't there a reason to be here? So the first reason was the Philistines had invaded Israel's land. The second reason, Goliath was defying, taunting, reproaching, embarrassing, mocking, and deriding Israel. Everyone look at me. When Putin makes fun of your president, does that bother you? I guess not. Listen, no idiot would make fun of Ronald Reagan. The last guy that tried that, we flew planes from Northern Europe out over the ocean, refueled mid-flight. Some of you don't even know what I'm talking about. You're too young. And because France didn't want us to go over French airspace, we refueled on way and bombed Gaddafi's backyard. You didn't mess with the president of the United States. We have people mocking our president. Probably because he's... reasons to be mocked. I think it bothered David that his country was being... Let's read all these verses. These are just references. Read the highlighted part. The Philistine said, I defy... These are all the same word. The armies of Israel this day. He's taunting, reproaching, embarrassing, mocking, deriding, defying Israel. 1725. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. They even recognized this, but they cowered. They were cowards, and they cowered back under, hid. In verse 26, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach, same word, from Israel? David was concerned about the honor of his country. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? 1736, the servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. 45. Then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." I got a question for you. If your child, look up here. The sleepy ones, not the folks that'll do this. Cliffy doesn't need to listen. Louie doesn't need to listen. How many of you really will take a stand for your own children? Or will you just get angry because they got in trouble? How many of you will go to the wall if something's wrong? Some people, he's out there defying things, but what's the big deal? Whatever. Turn the television. Whatever. Listen, somebody messed with Nina. That old geezer over there, he's old, but well-armed. Do you think he would do something? What do you think? Answer the question. Let me ask you, would you do something? I don't know. There's something about some men and women that when things go wrong, they go forward. Nehemiah has the exact same Hebrew words. Nehemiah chapter 1, the words of Nehemiah. Verse 2, "Then Hananiah, one of my brethren, came, and he and certain of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity that are in the province are in great affliction." Look at the word, same Hebrew word, "and reproach." People are mocking God's people. And that bothered him. Verse 4 says, "And it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and slept." I sat down and wept. "And I mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." Chapter 2:17. "Then said I unto them, you see the distress we are in and how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem that we be no more a reproach." That no one can defy us, taunt us, reproach us, embarrass us, mock us, deride us, humiliate us. That can't happen. I think this is the nature of leadership. 5, verse 9. "Also I said, it is not good that you do. Ought you not to walk in the fear of the Lord because of the reproach, that deriding, that taunting, that embarrassing, mocking, defying of the heathen around about?" 6:13. "Therefore he was hired that I should be afraid and do so and sin, and that they might have a matter for evil report, that they might reproach me." I want everyone to look at me. I'm going to hurry. Every year in my Bible class, let's see, Carly saw it this year, Brenna saw it this year, they'll see it again next year. I show videos of 9/11. Now, I want to be careful here. Pastor Warren, I am this man occasionally. There are men in this room that are this way all the time. And then there are males in this room that I don't know who you are. And you better figure out who you are. When 9/11 happened, Brennan, I don't know where you're at. Carly, you're back there. You guys saw this. It doesn't affect you the same way it would affect me. Part of that is you guys are young. Every year we watch this video is put out by National Geographic, and they show the flight of that plane into the Pentagon. It hit the Pentagon, and I mean, it went through, and just caused destruction and death. And there were some people on around a little bit, and I don't know their names. I wish I did. I can see their faces because I've seen it so much. I've memorized their faces. One was an Army officer, good-looking guy, looked like he was 5'10 or so, and one was a ranger or something. He looked like one of these guys that chewed nails and he put it in his cereal for breakfast. He was some kind of a ranger or something. But hear me, when the plane went in, nobody knew what happened. How do you plan for a plane coming into your building? They didn't know what happened, but the gossip immediately was, the officer said, they said there's small arms fire out there. So nobody wanted to flee the building thinking people were shooting. He said, well, the fires were on. So he says, the officer said, I let a group out. That's not what interests me. Everybody runs from the danger. Yes? The moment that officer got those people out there, he met that nail-chewing recon guy or whatever he was, and those two guys ran around. Are you listening? Yes? They ran back into the fire. That's not what people do. People run from problems, not to problems. They tell the story. They pulled several people out. Some of them were dead. They went back in one more time. They kept saying things, and that big old giant fellow that was a nail eater, he said, I thought I heard somebody. And there was a secretary that when that thing blew up, African-American woman, it blew her across the room, more or less knocked her out, knocked her silly. And she said, I couldn't move, but I could clap. But she says the flames were so hot, the smoke was so thick, that at the end I couldn't. And that old guy heard her. He reached through that fire and pulled her out. Are you looking at me, deadheads? Some of you will not take a stand for anything. I used to believe this. There was a day in my life that I thought men took a stand for their family. After pastoring here, I realized some men take a stand for nothing. I have a question for you. When the danger approaches your family, do you run to the fire, look up here, or away from it? By the way, don't do religion. What do you do? Most men run away. They go right back to TV and sleep. And therefore, by the way, there's men in this room not that way. And just so you know, I don't think I'm anything special. I don't know what I would do if there was a bomb. Do you? By the way, none of us know for there. My dad told me real clearly, he says, Ralph, you never know what's going to happen in battle. When people are shooting at you, you know, it's real good to watch John Wayne movies, you know, and you know you're the man. But when stuff's coming your way, you don't know what people's, you think, he says the guys you thought would stand run and the guys that were some guy that was a normal guy, he's the guy standing. Let me ask you a question. For your family, I love Superman back here. I call him that because he's pretty super. When I talked to Tom years ago, I don't know how many years ago now, and I said, Tom already knew this. I said, Tom, your son has got some real skill. By the way, all you had to do was look. I said, he should be involved in martial arts. Tom just went back to sleep, and he needed to watch some more TV. Right? Christy, too. When I talked to Tim and Debbie McGrail, and I remember their daughter, said, your daughter has some real skill. I said, she needs some training. John's going to take training. By the way, I didn't do anything with it. My wife did and Debbie did. But are you listening? Guess what they did? They got their daughter training. If I talked to some of you and said, you know, your child has got some skill here, you go back to TV. Now, I got a question, and I don't have an answer. Why do some people run to it and some people run away from it? And which one are you? David knew, he ran to Goliath because he knew exactly why he was there. This guy has encroached on our territory. He's defying our people, and this is not going to happen. What about you? We'll see. Number two. Now it gets nice. Read verse 31 with me. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul. And he, meaning Saul, sent for him. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. It's kind of funny. Here's a teenager saying to Saul, and by the way, who was the guy tallest in Israel? Head and shoulders above everybody else. And there was David, a youth. And David's telling this big, tall, strapping guy, oh, by the way, you know, let's not get nervous here. He says, thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth. Remember, I told you most of us never get to Goliath because of the two other ones. This is one of them. He says, you're but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and I smote him, and I slew him, I killed it. thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with you. Turn back to the front page of your notes. David ran, why? Why? Saul made a big mistake. He thought David was a novice. Everybody look at me. I said something this morning. We got some teenagers in here. Teenagers, I know you don't have a life yet. I love you. Pastor Warren's not mad at you. Please hear me. You guys know I like you. You don't have a life yet. Some of this you're not going to get until it's, look at me, it is 100% your life. Meaning it's you making your money, you fighting the battles yourself. Right now, mom and dad's taking care of you. It's a little different. Sooner or later, it comes down to it's you and God and what you're doing. And then all of a sudden, when Goliath's come your way, the question is, have you been here before? And look at the next page. I think it's best if I just give you the bullet points and see if this makes sense to you. David's thoughts, right out of these verses that we just read. His first thought to Saul is, Saul, you are wrong, Saul. You are wrong, Saul. Saul said, listen, you're not able to fight this guy. You're but a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. You can't beat him. And he says, you're wrong, Saul. I say in your notes, David said to him, in this I'm paraphrasing or summarizing, I've been here before. Hey, look at me. I know we got young people here. You still live under the roof. Mom and dad take care of you. God bless you. I'm happy for it. But there comes a day when all of a sudden mom and dad isn't there. It's just you. And you're going to face whatever you're going to face. And sometimes those are going to be obstacles. Hear me. They're going to be obstacles you never planned on facing. How do you face the Goliath? Because you've already been here before. So I'm going to give you the first three bullet points quickly because I want you to grab these in your mind and heart. I say this. I'm just summarizing David. Saul, you're wrong, Saul. I've been here before. In fact, more than once. I'm going to summarize my next three statements. Please look up here. You see, Saul's looking at this and he's saying, here you are, a kid. How are you going to fight Goliath? And David's sitting over here saying, look at here, look here, look here, look here. David's saying, you're missing the point. I've already fought Goliath. This isn't my first go around. You know, I was out taking care of my sheep and there came a bear and I killed that bear. And later, by the way, have you killed a bear with your hands recently? And a little later, another time, there came a lion and I killed a lion. When I go out after this Goliath guy, I've been here before. You know, God delivered me from the bear, he delivered me from the lion, and God will deliver me from the Philistine. I've been here before. And let me say something to all of you. The only way you ever go forward is what you have done in the past. And this is what you do as a young person. You win some victories with God, and then you win a bigger victory, and then you win a bigger victory, and then you win a bigger victory. And you say, well, I'm only 20, or I'm only 18, or I'm only 22. I will tell you this, and I love Cassie and Victoria and John and that handsome guy right by John. I don't know his name, though. Josh. Look at me. You guys smile. You pay attention some of the time. You're going to find 20 years from now, the victories you win now or don't win now make you 20 years from now. So those little victories, I will not drink. I will not party. I will not, or I will be part of a church. I will be part of a Bible study. I will have Christian friends. The victories you win now, 20 years from now, will tell you everything. Because you don't just one day come out and meet Goliath. You better have a string of lions and bears before you get to Goliath. Or you're going to be some Goliath meat. Look at me. Is everybody hearing what I'm saying? It's amazing to me. Saul didn't have a clue. Saul looked at David. Looked at Goliath and he's thinking, you don't have a chance. And David's thinking, What do you mean they don't have a chance? Let's read all these that I've said. You're wrong, Saul. I've been here before. In fact, more than once. The Lord delivered me from the lion. The Lord also delivered me from the bear. And the Lord will deliver me from this Philistine also. Here's where the action comes. Looking back in faith helps me look forward in faith. You see, folks, when you have some things that God has done, you start to know what God can do. So by looking back at what God has done in faith, you're able to look forward. Please hear me. But if you don't win any battles, John, how old are you? You're not sure how old you are. The battles you win from now to probably age 19 or 20 will tell you who you'll be at age 40, or the battles you don't win. Because God isn't going to let you go down a smooth path until age 40 and there's Goliath. God takes you down a process. Many battles. Some of them you lose, but when you look back in faith, you're able to look forward in faith. Let me say all of this a different way. The Lord's deliverance in the wilderness of Judah. You know, the wilderness of Judah where David kept the sheep. God delivered him from a bear. God delivered him from a lion. The Lord's deliverances in the wilderness of Judah leads to the Lord's deliverance in the valley of Elah. The valley of Elah is not special. The valley of Elah is normal. The valley of Elah is simply this. It's part of the whole process of coming through. And you look back. Verses that teach the same thing. I've preached this many times. 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 10. My friend, you have to have this in your soul. When Paul looked forward to the struggles that he faced, he spoke about God and he speaks of God by saying this. God, and it's in the previous verse, who delivered us from so great a death, that's past, and doth deliver us, present, in whom we trust he will yet deliver us. My friend, lions, bears, Goliath. Lions, bears, Goliath in the next one. It always works this way. Saul saw a kid. David didn't see it. He wasn't looking at himself. He was saying, you know, I know what God's done. I've been here before. So I can run to this guy because I've been here before. I fought these kind of battles before. Next passage, please. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me, Paul said. This is the last book he wrote. He says, and he strengthened me that by me the preaching might be fully known and that all the Gentiles might hear. And I was delivered out of the mouth of a lion. Do you think he might be referring generally to what? Hello? Either Daniel or David's story or both? He goes on to say, not only he did deliver me back then, he says, and the Lord shall deliver me from every evil work. Not only will he deliver me, he will preserve me unto his heavenly kingdom, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. Frenchie said he wanted to know about keep your mementos. Please look up here. I have things in my hand. Some of you, anytime you have a crisis, you just fall apart. I have mementos. I'm not going to show you all of them. I have one memento from a young lady. And this, she wrote a poem. I'm not going to tell you who this young lady is. She wrote this poem April 28th, 2010. She wrote a nice letter to me, and she wrote a nice poem about this place. I keep it in my Bible. You know why? It's a memento. I have here in my hand, we wanted to raise some money in St. Louis. The church in St. Louis was like the church at Lake County, never had two dimes to rub together. Let me ask all the older members, do you remember those days? Okay, some of you kind of vaguely know that happened someplace. I said, we're going to have a special offering. I have no idea what I said we needed for. I don't remember any of the details. This happened probably in the year 1989. You don't remember even, some of you don't remember 1989. I don't either, but I remember we needed money for something. May have been 1990. One of the deacons came to me. Oh, His name was David's older brother, Pastor Warren. If we have a special offering, every time we've ever had a special offering in the history of this church, do you know those kind of people? This is what people do. We have a special offering, but they don't tithe for the month before and the month after, so we're broke. I said, well, I don't know what that means, but I think that we should try to do what's right, raise this money for whatever this project is. It seemed like we needed $5,000. Now, the offerings weren't as big in St. Louis. Church was smaller in those days, but we would average, hope to average $2,000 a week in offerings at that time, and we wanted to raise $5,000. And I still remember when the deacon handed me for the month before and the month after, the offerings were absolutely normal. On this particular Sunday, the offering was $2,252.69, and the special offering was $8,452.02. I keep that in my pocket. It's a memento. Do you have mementos? I want to ask you, if we stop right now and you came forward, can you tell me about your lions and your bears? Well, let me give you another one. I keep another little card. It's a picture. Jenny knows these people. Amy knows these people. This lady right here, Mike Darrington and Betsy. Betsy always wanted children. She had cancer, I think breast cancer. She got treated. Mike and her were married. She kept having children. She'd get pregnant, she'd lose the children. Get pregnant, lose the children. Get pregnant, lose the children. Finally, she got pregnant, unbelievably, with twins. Twins. And everybody is praying and, frankly, holding their breath. We have a family conference on a weekend. Betsy goes into the hospital. She's probably 4 months early. We think for sure she's losing the babies. By the way, the first night she lost one of the two. I have a card. This is from July 29th, 1990. And at the top of it, it says, Michael Darrington II, my first day in church. Look at me in the eyes. Do you have any Goliaths? When the fight comes, are you willing to run to the fight or run away? You're not going to run to the fight if they're John, Josh, Victoria, Cassie, if you haven't won some small battles, so when the bigger battle comes, you know that God can bring you through this. You're going to be running, compromising, fitting into the woodwork, being a zero. I had to fight battles back in the dark ages so long ago that I can't remember. I can't remember when I was 18, but I remember the struggle over pot and the struggle over alcohol. And I can remember the day I promised God, no more stupid. Do you know those days? Yes or no? You'll be challenged. By the way, you two gentlemen are going to have problems I never had. You say, what with? It's that thing called a computer and the stupid you can get into on a computer. You better have some victories. Hey, there's Goliath. Where are you at? Running. Or running to him. Or, in some cases, taking a nap or watching TV. I have more mementos. Do you have mementos? Do you keep things like this? Do you realize I wanted to raise $5,000 for our missions project and we raised almost $10,000? And some people still sleep. My goodness, the goodness of God, the goodness of God's people. Number three, David ran because, first of all, he had a reason to be there for. He was there to protect his nation. And he didn't want Goliath defying, taunting, reproaching, embarrassing, mocking, and deriding Israel. Secondly, David ran because he had been there before. This wasn't his first battle. He had had many battles, two major battles, and he knew this. I always wonder, and I want to ask this, I don't have any proof, but you wonder, did he keep something from the bear and the lion? He kept something from Goliath, didn't he? Do you know why people did that? There's reasons. See? This is what God can do. Now, I don't know if I'd bring the head home. Okay, Louis, don't get any ideas. Louis's going head hunting someplace. Lastly, David ran because of a true spirit of core. There's something that flowed from his soul. When David is ready to fight the Philistine, it said, David said to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I am come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts." There's something about this that David had in him that he was fighting in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of these armies of Israel. Verse 46, David said, "This day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowl of the air and to the wild beast of the earth." And then I love this last statement, "that all the earth may know there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with a sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it into our hands." Father, thank you for your word tonight.